Support comes from Mosby Building Arts, refreshing outdated bathrooms into modern indoor retreats. More at callmosby.com.
From the St. Louis Public Radio Newsroom, this is The Gateway. It's Thursday, February 13th. I'm Abby Larico. Former Illinois House Speaker Mike Madigan held power in the state for nearly five decades. Yesterday, he was found guilty on 10 counts of corruption.
After 10 years of investigating Madigan, this all-powerful guy, the speaker, faces the prospect of significant prison time.
A recap of the verdicts of the five-month trial coming up on The Gateway. The question of how finances for the city of St. Louis would be impacted by a federal spending freeze was the topic of a special meeting of the St. Louis Board of Estimate and Apportionment last night. The city receives at least $162 million in federal funding, and over 150 city government projects would be affected by President Donald Trump's executive orders to freeze billions in federal spending. Casey Milberg is the policy director for St. Louis Mayor Tashara Jones.
There's federal actions that are anticipated in the coming days, weeks, and months that are likely to provide both clarity as well as some potential negative impacts that all local governments will have to be prepared to pivot to.
The board also discussed the need for proactive measures while lawsuits against the executive orders continue to play out in court. A federal judge has temporarily blocked a cap on National Institutes of Health grants to research institutions, but if those efforts move forward, they could have grave consequences for Washington University, the University of Missouri, and other schools in the state of Missouri. St. Louis Public Radio's Sarah Fenton reports.
The NIH last year awarded Missouri schools and institutions more than $900 million for medical research. Washington University was among the nation's top institutions for NIH funding. The grants are split into two categories. Direct costs pay for project-specific research and equipment. Indirect costs cover electricity, rent, and other infrastructure. The Trump administration has proposed capping those indirect costs. Heather Pierce is with the Association of American Medical Colleges.
I think that they're maybe a lack of understanding generally that these costs are the real costs of doing research.
She says indirect costs can constitute up to one half of a grant's total value. I'm Sarah Fenton, St. Louis Public Radio.
The board of Sangamon County, Illinois, has unanimously approved a $10 million settlement with Sonia Massey's family. Massey was an unarmed black woman who was killed last summer by then-sheriff's deputy Sean Grayson. Community members have since pushed the county to establish recall elections for the sheriff. Despite opposition from most members, the board endorsed a state lawmaker's bill that would create a path for counties to establish recall elections. A former state representative and alderwoman from South St. Louis says it's beyond time for a change in the office of comptroller. St. Louis Public Radio's Rachel Lippman explains why Donna Berenger says she's the best candidate for the job.
Comptroller Darlene Green has been in office since 1995 and ran unopposed or faced just token opposition in most of her seven elections. But Berenger says she can do a better job with her expertise in looking at financial information.
My talent is you can hand me financials and you can think I'm only going to look at what you put before me, but I'm going to actually drill down and I'm going to find out if you're not wanting me to know something or I'm going to find what you forgot.
Berenger does not have an accounting background, but she served on the budget committee while at City Hall and was the highest ranking Democrat on the state House committee that looks at the fiscal impact of all bills. She was a guest on the Politically Speaking podcast. I'm Rachel Lippman, St. Louis Public Radio.
All three comptroller candidates will appear on the podcast this month. Tech job openings in the St. Louis region ticked up 1.5% between 2023 and 2024. That's according to a new report from Tech STL, the region's tech council. It comes after the same report last year showed a steep drop in tech-related openings. The report also says the vast majority of all jobs in the country will require digital proficiency. It's something leaders in St. Louis are paying attention to as well. Sam Fiorello is the president and CEO of Cortex.
We're going to have to all be prepared for a world in which requires lifelong learning, right? We're not going to go and get a degree, a skill set, and then have a 30-year career.
Fiorello says it's vital that local community colleges, universities, and other educational institutions also adopt this mindset. A North St. Louis bakery and cafe is expected to open soon. That's after the Public Service Commission initially objected to the proposal. As STLPR's Chad Davis reports, supporters of the cafe say it will offer much-needed options in a food desert.
The Uhuru Bakery and Cafe will open on West Florissant Avenue in the College Hill neighborhood. Operators of the bakery applied for a conditional use permit last year before it was rejected by the Board of Public Service, saying it was bad for the neighborhood. Most of the people testifying during the meeting supported the cafe. Mary Wheeler Jones is a nearby resident.
When it's time to eat, have a cup of coffee, a tea, or have a glass of wine, or meet with our friends, we have to leave our community.
Members of the College Hill Neighborhood Association criticized the cafe. Three individuals with ties to the cafe were convicted of conspiracy charges in a Russian conspiracy trial. A U.S. district judge ruled that they won't face prison time. I'm Chad Davis, St. Louis Public Radio.
Federal prosecutors call their conviction in the case of Michael Madigan yesterday a historic win. The former Illinois House Speaker was found guilty of wire fraud and bribery. But the jury also found him not guilty on other charges and couldn't agree on a verdict on the remaining ones. Illinois politics reporter Dave McKinney has covered this trial from start to finish over 5 months. He spoke with Melba Lara about its conclusion.
This started when we were still playing baseball in the fall, back in mid-October. And even though it was a mixed verdict, it still carries serious implications for the former House Speaker. He was convicted on 10 of 23 counts. And as you mentioned, these are, they involve conspiracy, bribery, wire fraud. Those are very serious charges. Wire fraud, for example, the maximum prison sentence associated with that is 20 years. And so he faces the potential of significant prison time as a result of this. You know, the primary thing that you think about here is that there were a couple of major prongs that the feds had with this case. One involved Madigan as speaker. He was doing favors, allegedly, for Commonwealth Edison. While they wanted legislation, they had a series of bills that they wanted passed through Springfield that meant a lot of money to the company. He, in turn, was asking them to hire some of his political workers in no-work jobs that paid hundreds of thousands of dollars. That's an issue that the jury seemed to really latch on to. There was another piece of this case, though, that the feds presented that involved Madigan's property tax law firm and his attempt to try to get developers through a corrupt former alderman, Danny Solis, to come join his firm and pay his firm. The jury didn't find really much credence in the government's case there. So that was a bit of a defeat for them. But I think the main takeaway, it's a big win for the feds.
And I'm going to ask you about Solis in a minute. But were you in the courtroom when the verdict was announced?
I was, yeah.
How did Madigan react?
At some point during the trial, I think it was the U.S. Congressman Nikki Budzinski from downstate talked about how they called Madigan the Sphinx, you know, the expressionless entity in Egypt that was all powerful. And he was like that in the courtroom when the verdict was read. He had a couple of his children there with him, a couple of daughters. But as this verdict was being read, he just sort of looked at the floor a few times, but otherwise was pretty stoic and expressionless. I think the way that these charges were presented, the first charge on the verdict form that the jury filled out was racketeering. And that was sort of regarded as, you know, really a very serious piece of this. It's a charge you associate with organized crime and drug cartels. And when the jury said that they were deadlocked on that, there was this momentary feeling in the courtroom like, is he going to get off? And then, you know, during the rest of the counts here, one by one, you know, they started adding up. And as I mentioned, 10 of them guilty.
And this jury deliberated for almost 2 weeks, but they also found him not guilty on 7 counts. And there were others, they didn't come into an agreement at all. What did you take away from that?
Danny Solis was this not a very likable figure in court. I mean, he had all this baggage. The defense lawyers presented him as a tax cheat. They talked about his problems in the city council where he was taking Viagra and taking prostitution services from developers. I mean, just a sleazy portrayal of this guy. He was a key government witness and was really at the crux of the government trying to prove that Madigan illegally was shaking down developers for his law firm. And the fact that there was only one piece of that where the feds had Solis asking for Madigan's help to get an appointment to a state board, that was the lone Solis count that there was a conviction on. So I think by and large, Solis was not regarded as a very believable or likable figure by the jury.
The prosecutor spoke to reporters afterwards. Did they seem bothered at all by this mixed verdict?
Well, I mean, if you've ever hung around with prosecutors or been around them, they like Madigan, they don't smile very much. They're known for that. But you know, you just got a sense that they were all pretty thrilled that even though they took losses, that this wasn't a clean sweep, they wound up getting enough counts and convictions here that after 10 years of investigating Madigan, this all-powerful guy, the speaker, faces the prospect of significant prison time. So I think that there was, you know, the feeling that all of that work had paid off for them.
I want to talk to you about the co-defendant in this case, Michael McLean. He's a lobbyist for ComEd, a longtime friend of Madigan's, although during the trial there was some testimony that they're not such close friends anymore. The jury did not reach an agreement on the charges that were specific to him. So what happens next for McLean?
Well, McLean, I think there was a sense of relief for him. I mean, he was charged on six counts, and in all six of those cases, the jury was deadlocked. What was interesting about McLean here, he's really a guy that a lot of people in Illinois don't know who he is. But he was presented during trial as this right-hand man for Madigan, the guy that was carrying out a lot of the orders and carrying water for Madigan. And many of the 150-plus recordings the feds presented to jurors as evidence and the emails, it was McLean that was sort of at the center of that. At the end of the day, I think the jury sort of looked at Madigan as the kingpin of all of this and had trouble reaching convicting McLean for this. Now, McLean, if you remember 2 years ago, he was a defendant in the ComEd case. There were four former ComEd executives and lobbyists who were convicted, and that was really kind of the marquee case that started this legal process here of these cases, these corruption cases. That was built around the bribery scheme involving Madigan. And so he's yet to be sentenced for that. He's not going to avoid prison, it doesn't look like. But today, he talked to reporters briefly, and he said his head was spinning. Clearly, he and his wife and family who were there were pretty elated that there wasn't more tacked on to that.
I understand you spoke to a juror, and what did they have to say to you?
Well, I think the takeaway from the juror was that, you know, Madigan, at one point late in this trial, Madigan made the choice to testify in his own defense. And at one point said that he was angered to learn that some of these precinct captains and political workers of his that he had helped get jobs at ComEd, that he was angered to learn they were being paid gobs of money for doing no work. And what the juror said, he didn't identify himself other than his first name, Malik. He said that Madigan may have thought he was being truthful, but at the end of the day, all the facts didn't add up with that.
And Dave, you've been reporting on this investigation for years because it's taken a while and it's finally come to this moment. What's your takeaway?
Well, I mean, someday, you know, Mike Madigan is, hopefully many years from now, but someday he's going to have an obituary. And this is probably going to be in the first sentence of that obituary because he set the record for being the longest serving speaker, but now he's going to be remembered as the convicted ex-speaker.
That was Illinois politics reporter Dave McKinney talking about the conviction of former Illinois House Speaker Michael Madigan. He spoke with Mel Ballara of partner station WBEZ in Chicago. The Gateway is a production of St. Louis Public Radio, a listener-supported service of the University of Missouri-St. Louis. Theme music by Ryan McNeely of Adult Fur. I'm Abby Larico, and from the St. Louis Public Radio newsroom, this has been The Gateway.